email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, best-selling author of Did You Hear Mammy Died is in Dublin and he's in studio. Seamus O'Reilly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
We've spoken so many times on the phone and on Zoom and on various things, and it's the first time I've actually seen you. You look taller than you do on the phone.
Oh, that's one of the nicest things you can say to someone about their phone height.
Because you sound smaller on the phone. You do. You sound smaller.
Yeah, you're basically the same height as a phone, I guess.
No, but I
have a very commanding presence. People often compliment me about it.
Yes, you're not
the first.
Yeah, not the first to say that. How long is it since Did You Hear Mammy Died
came out? It was about, it'll be 3 years in July.
Right.
Yeah, does and it doesn't feel that long, but yeah.
And are you working on the difficult second book?
Possibly several difficult second, third, fourth, fifth projects, yeah, about which I can say very little, except
right,
they're excellent and all coming in on time and nobody should be worried if my agent and or publisher or anyone else
has. As he blushes.
Yeah.
That's the brilliant thing about radio, you can blush and nobody sees you.
I know, but now everyone knows how tall I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What height are you?
I'm 6'9". I am, I think, exactly 6 foot. My wife is screaming at the radio because she believes that I'm 5'11 and a half.
6 foot nine. Do you know the average height of an NBA basketball player?
Ooh. I'm going to guess it's taller than 5'11 and a half.
Yes.
So I'll say 6'4".
6'7".
Oh, because I thought there's a few short ones. That was
but there's a lot of them over 7 foot.
Oh, my God.
I know this because my 11-year-old son is obsessed with the NBA at the moment.
So do you think it's too late for me to have
I think it's probably too late. Yeah.
Is he tall, your son?
Well, do you know when you go to the doctor now, they give you this percentile statistic.
Yep.
So we were told when he was only 5 months old or whatever, that he'd be in the top 5 percentile, which means he'd be over 6 foot, could be 6'2". Now you're looking at me and you're going, how did that happen? Aren't you?
That's well, you're sitting down, so yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'll stand up for you if you like. See.
Okay,
yeah, you see. But his auntie is tall.
Oh, right. So it runs down the auntie line.
Well, yeah. So he could be 6'2". He'd be a small NBA player, but he could be an NBA player.
Yeah, because a lot of the times those that sort of the dark horse there, the one that's like in the middle of the pack, a little bit smaller sometimes. Steve Nash wasn't very tall.
And they try harder, you see.
That's right. You know that they had to really
work
fight
at
to get
it, yes,
there.
As opposed to the guy who's 7'2" and just stands under the hoop and goes... Psh, psh,
is psh, your son also extremely hardworking and very good at basketball?
Well, he's both.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's both at the moment. I've nothing to compare him to.
That's true.
You know? Yeah.
My best friend in school, he was Dermot, who might be listening somewhere in Melbourne. He was the best basketball player I ever saw, and he's like 3 inches shorter than I am. So
right, there you go.
It can happen.
So you're working away on projects while writing for various newspapers.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
A lot of the time on stuff that's very easy to write about, very personal, just basically remembering things and adding jokes.
Right.
So, and then sometimes I get the chance to review bits and pieces for the likes of The Examiner, for
right,
example.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So you're writing a piece for The Examiner tomorrow now. What's that on?
That one is on a subject which I can kind of bodlerize to encrapification.
Encrapification?
Because right, the actual term uses...
Oh, has the other word, yes.
Has
yes,
the other word in
yes,
it.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, you know, young ears may be listening,
yeah,
whatever their heights. and it's more about how technology kind of interfaces with our lives and should make everything better, but does not do that. And it was spurned by the fact that I recently got told that all of the stuff that I have in my Google Drive is going to have to be basically deleted or moved. And it reminded me of all the other ways that these things happen. The fact that if you're trying to sign up for something on like your local leisure centre, sometimes they won't even let you have non-standard characters. So, for example, if you have a fada or an apostrophe,
oh, yes,
not that anyone in Ireland would have an O and apostrophe in their name, or a D and apostrophe.
Yes, yes, yeah.
So all these little things kind of just started adding up, and a tech writer called Cory Doctorow came up with a great term. We will call it encrapification here,
yeah,
which lays it out where you just have all of these things which are supposed to save time and energy. Like, who wouldn't have thought that a self-service checkout would be great? And
yeah,
then everyone's experience of it is having to put up your hand like a little child asking for his lettuce to be cut up to get the person over to sign in your booze or your take
yes,
the thing off your baby formula or whatever it is. So Yes, it's me getting out all of my anger.
It's not going to get any better, Seamus. It's only going to get worse.
Yeah. And like, I think
this circular thing that I hate about the bank, right? So your app doesn't work. You go, fine, my app doesn't work. I'll go online. Well, you know what happens when you go online?
I think I do.
You need to verify it on your app, which doesn't work. Surely they should have worked that out.
Or when you ring someone up and it's just I mean, we really do sound like grumpy old men now, but this is important stuff. If you're not able to access all these things, for after a while, you just stop trying. So as much as it is kind of anarchy, annoyed kind of whinge that we can all do, it doesn't actually have to be that way. There could be people, you know, real human people doing these things. And also, they'd be getting paid a wage, and that's a good thing. So there is obviously a silly kind of narky, whingy part of it. And I love to complain, so that's good. But there is also this sort of really upsetting component to it where it's like, it doesn't have to be as terrible. The future doesn't have to be this boring
and as you pointed
terrible.
Out at the start, these things are supposed to make life easier and embellish our existence on this planet.
Yes. And wouldn't you say it's very coincidental that every single time they seem to work worse and worse and worse for the people using them, but cost less and less and less money for the people who basically put them in. So you can't help but put the tinfoil hat on and say, this is all, it's all deliberate.
While we're on technology, we just divert slightly to social media and to TikTok. And that, I know this has followed you around, but this is an amazing statistic. Your interview on Virgin Media One, right, that clip, 620 million accumulated views on the various clips of it on TikTok.
Is it really that many?
Like, that's 620 million. That's over half a billion, Seamus. Now, just for people who don't remember it. So you were on with the book 3 years ago and Claire McKenna was introducing you and Tommy Bow was sitting beside her.
Lovely Tommy Bow.
And this is how it went.
And you're very welcome back. Now, author Seamus O'Reilly was just 5 years old when he and his 10 siblings...
10 siblings?
...sadly lost their mum.
That noise, if you could... I've tried to write it down so many times that... Oof, it's like a... O-O-M-F-F, maybe. It's like... It's so... It's such a perfect little noise. I felt so bad for Tommy, and it has followed him around quite a bit. But I mean, he's obviously, you know, he's more than able for it, and he's, you know, turned it into quite a funny
thing. He's come to terms with it. Yeah.
I've seen clips. People send me clips of it all the time. I've seen all the remixes.
Right.
I have literally been sent some version of that clip. It's not even an exaggeration, over 1,000 times. And I still really enjoy it.
But it sounds like it's edited in, you know?
But
you're very welcome back. Now, author Seamus O'Reilly was just 5 years old when he and his 10 siblings...
10 siblings?
...sadly lost their mum.
I mean, the thing is, like, he has got, like, 100 caps for Ireland. He's won Six Nations and Lions Tours. Yeah.
And he's an accomplished broadcaster.
Broadcaster and a fine, upstanding man. And he is constantly tagged on things.
Sorry, he has a range of clothing and shoes as well.
That's also, he's an impresario.
Yeah.
But he is, I'd say, more often than he would like, aka constantly, referred to as the 10 siblings guy. But what's funny is it doesn't follow me around because people very rarely remember that I'm a part of it. Even to the point where if I write about having 10 siblings, which I do, famously, people will say underneath the 10 siblings thing, thinking they're making a joke. They don't realise, no, I am the guy. So I've gotten away with it scot-free, and my entire family, to just put it out of beyond any doubt, which I have done several times, but which I'm sure they'll be happy for me to repeat, we all thought it was extremely funny. There was never any point that we were offended. We really thought it was priceless.
What a brilliant way of keeping your mother alive. And I know her memory alive, isn't it? I know, because it's
exactly what she would have wanted.
Isn't it? Because people are smiling and laughing now.
Yeah. Well, I think as well, there is a certain degree of that sort of stuff that I talk about in the book, is how people talk about death, and people can also be very clammed up and like not want to offend. And if nothing else, it was a really good example of people can make the wrong choice and you can have a laugh about it rather than, you know, kind of feel too bad about it on their behalf or, you know, obviously they sort of be judgmental. It was live TV and it was a funny moment, even in, you know, there and then there was never any sense. And he was, of course...
Are you the youngest of 11?
I am the ninth of 11.
The ninth of 11, yes.
So the middle child, we like to call it.
Yeah. There was nine, I told you this before, nine in our family.
Ah.
So I know what it's like. It's like, I thought it was the best thing ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I did really enjoy it. It was great. I mean, it's hard to compare it to anything else, though, because I don't know.
That's but, true. But your dad comes across, because I read the book, because we interviewed you back in the day, your dad comes across as a bit of a superhero, Robert.
Yes.
And he's fans now, as a result.
Well, he's got an awful big head.
Right.
The one occasion that it really, I mean, first of all, there are a lot of people coming out of the woodwork and saying, you know, really lovely things. Like people I had a lot of, you know, respect for and admiration for. Like Marion Keyes said she was in love with him. Mm-hmm. And of course, now my dad's read every Marion Keyes book.
Has he?
That's what it takes to get my father's paying custom, it turns out. Just declare your love. He was very pleased when Nigella Lawson said something similar, as we all would be, I'm sure. But probably the most incredible one was I went to an event in Donegal in Ballyshannon and came back for it over from London. And I said, I'll bring my dad because, you know, it's Donegal. It's just down the road. Let's go. So we were there and it all went great. There wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was very emotional and great. And then at the end, I'm signing books. And I noticed that there's like less people than I saw coming down or at the table. And I look over and there is a secondary queue of people. And it's all of my adoring fans are queuing up to have their book signed by my father. And the first sign that this was definitely happening was when I opened up one of my own books and I saw the only signature I know better than my own, which is my father's ludicrous chicken scratch that I have myself copied many, many times for school reports and bad things, which he, by the way, encouraged me to do so because he had enough going on with his other children.
Yeah.
So that was a sign that I should never take him out of the house. And I should probably nip it in the bud and stop praising
him. I can understand
him.
Why he would have fans, you know. And
he's
you're responsible. You lauded him in the book. So.
I'm his number one fan, obviously. Yeah. But he did
an ancestry test recently.
Yeah, I was talking.
You want to be careful doing those things.
Well, if you're not looking for anything too cosmopolitan.
Right.
So my father did an ancestry test. He's been doing actually a lot of these sort of genealogy things for a long time, like even back in the 90s. But when he discovered the sort of online thing, which has this huge database, he was like, oh, I'll get back into it. He got out all the old reference works and everything. And he did one of those ancestry things, which gives you like a pie chart. And, you know, I've seen these in loads of places. It's like, you know, 90% Irish, 10% Scottish, bit of Welsh, bit of, you know, the Viking in there. We weren't expecting the world, right? No, like, Korean cousins or, like, a Persian grandparent that we weren't aware of. He was 100% Irish. 100%. And I was so crushed. He was, you know, not moved one way or the other, but I thought maybe there'd be something.
So you wanted a bit of exotic
something, yeah.
Genealogy in your ancestry. Yeah.
The only thing when he went back through the list, he went through and very meticulous. My dad's meticulous in everything he does. He's an engineer by trade. The only thing he found was that he was very distantly related to Bishop Edward Daly, who was a very famous
Bloody Sunday with
exactly.
The handkerchief, yeah.
But that wasn't a massive surprise because my dad's from the same town as him. And in fact, whenever we moved to Derry, Bishop Daly apparently drove them around and showed them where they could like send us to school. So his mother, my granny, babysat Edward Daly. So it's like opening up a Kinder surprise egg and finding inside it a photograph of the outside of a Kinder Surprise egg.
But here's the thing. You know when they do Who Do You Think You Are?
Yeah.
That they'll approach you first and they go, we're thinking of maybe doing you, Seamus O'Reilly, famous, mm-hmm. famous author.
Could happen, yeah.
Anytime. And then they go away and then you get the call. You go, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because they discover that your past is... That interesting.
That happened to Michael Parkinson.
I did it. Right.
Yeah. They just went through and like, nope, it's exactly what we, like it would be. What you want is like a pirate in there. Or
yeah.
I think Boris Johnson did one and it was like related to like six different types of royalty in like Britain and Turkey and everything. That's what you want.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It makes a good 45 minutes on a Sunday evening.
Yeah.
Yeah. but Bishop Daly is, that's.
That's pretty good, isn't it?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I mean,
yeah.
We're clutching here.
Listen, you are going to come back in when you have your next book out, or is there an adaptation of? Is there a TV adaptation?
At the moment, I can't possibly say anything about anything. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah,
and me so talkative.
Yeah, really enjoy Seamus O'Reilly's writing.
Oh,
very
thanks.
Good, very good writer. There, you have a fan, and so it's the Examiner. Are you still writing with the Guardian or
the Examiner every Saturday, the Observer every Sunday.
Observer every Sunday, right? Great to see you. Whenever you're in town, do pop in. We just have a chat about basketball and stuff.
Always. I want a crookie next time, though. I'm very sad that I didn't get one.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well,
this is a disgrace. I'll be talking to my agent.
Yeah, right. You have to make way for Mundy, who's coming in. Seamus O'Reilly, thank you very much.
Thank you
very much. Dead Siblings.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.